The round of eight, known as the conference semifinals, has now come to a close in this year's NBA playoffs, as a quadruplet of teams now seek to go to war against one another for the precious opportunity to represent their respective conference, for the right to capture the game's ultimate prize on the stage we basketball fans know simply as the finals. What's going on, world, and welcome to the new 24, the Alperen Sengun episode, as we have now reached 28 episodes for all of the devoted listeners. Keep in count wherever you're listening to us from, as we thank you as always for taking out your precious time to hear us share our thoughts on everything that's currently going down around the association. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and I'm joined as always beside my partner and co-host, Torrence Stagger, to discuss it all. We're watching the late commissioner, David Stern's dream unfold right in front of our eyes. How you feeling, man?
Hey, man, feeling good, feeling great. Episode 28, also Isaiah Stewart, shout out to him. Number 28, the number of wealth. And the once, I'm not even going to say once because this man is still present and thriving. But creator of Billionaires Boys Club, Pharrell Williams, once said, wealth is of the mind, not the pocket.
On the previous episode of the new 24, me and Torrence took a moment to highlight what's led to the Indiana Pacers' success through the first two rounds of this year's playoffs, prior to the franchise making their way back to the conference finals for the second straight season, including the maturation of Julius Randle's game that has been on full display thus far during the postseason out in the Twin Cities, before getting into a discussion on the New York Knicks' spectacular play and clutch outings. Now, only four teams are left standing with the chance to win it all, as the time has come for us to break down the things that you should be on the lookout for in both the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. However, before we get into all the main topics at hand, let's take a brief moment to give a tip of the cap to the game's premier performers, who left their imprint on these playoffs in a grand way as part of this week's opening tip-off segment, starting with a three-time All-Star who will likely receive all NBA honors for the second consecutive year in the coming days, and that's Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves. The 23-year-old became the second youngest shooting guard and just the sixth player in league history to reach 1,000 playoff points before reaching the age of 24. On the way to joining the Hall of Famer, Kevin Garnett is the only player in Timberwolves franchise history to surpass the 1K mark during the postseason and route the guy in Minnesota past the Golden State Warriors in game five of the Western Conference semifinals, in addition to a player who continues to cement himself as a true force on both ends of the floor and become a New York Knicks fan favorite in Josh Hart, whose 10 points, 11 assists, and 11 rebounds in 33 minutes against the Boston Celtics not only helped his squad secure a commanding win in game six on the way to securing a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals, but helped the Villanova alum etch his name in exclusive company as Hart became the first Knick to record a triple-double in a playoff outing since the icon Walt Clyde Frazier did so all the way back in 1972. And last but not least, Luke Kornet of the Boston Celtics, who became just the second player in the last 40 years to ever record 10-plus points and block 7-plus shots without missing a shot from the floor against the Knicks during game five of the Eastern Conference semifinals, as the Vanderbilt product managed to join Sean Kemp in the exclusive club. You know, Torrence, we managed to witness a championship squad in the Boston Celtics get dethroned by the New York Knicks, who after a quarter-century hiatus will make their official return to the conference finals, not to mention the Oklahoma City Thunder taking care of business and closing out the Denver Nuggets in seven games to punch their ticket into the Western Conference Finals for the first time since 2016. For the seventh straight year, the NBA will not have a back-to-back champion, marking the first time ever in league history that that's ever happened. When you reflect back on the week that was, what are some of the major storylines that stood out to you around the league since we last convened to talk about the game?
Let's keep up with the theme of elimination and trades at this part of the show the last few weeks. The Denver Nuggets, back-to-back years, losing to the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder, the two teams that are in the Western Conference. If you don't, like, see a sign of the torch being passed, I mean, that's one for you right there. It's two teams. We know the Houston Rockets are coming. We know the San Antonio Spurs are coming. The Denver Nuggets find themselves in a position similar to the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers. Yeah, you have a superstar who's starting to be getting a little worn down, playing a lot of minutes, doing a lot of carrying. And all of a sudden, you have a lot of high salary guys who are not great two-way players. Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray. What are you going to do with those two guys over this offseason? Aaron Gordon, of course, has to get healthy. Not knocking him at all. He put up a great effort in game seven. And he definitely won at least two games during this postseason for the Nuggets, too. So his spot's pretty secure. But what about that bench? What about those young guys? Calvin Booth was let go this season. Mike Malone was let go. Now, it's understood that those two guys didn't have the best relationship. We spoke about all things related to that situation weeks ago. During the series, we saw guys like Julian Strother, Peyton Watson step up off the bench. And we know that that was a part of Calvin Booth's plan because of how the CBA is set up. And we got to prioritize these young guys. We have to develop them, try to sign them under team-friendly contracts. He was let go, and probably rightfully so, because you let Nuggets fans tell you he wasn't a big fan of Strother. He gave, what's the guy's name? The center on the bench.
Zeke Nnaji. Yeah, he
Yeah,
got a
Nnaji.
4-year deal for 32 mil.
Same situation, but the guy was unplayable according to the interim coach because he wasn't used at all. You gave Michael Porter the deal he has with a lot of money left on it. You gave Jamal Murray that deal. Sam Presti gets credit for pretty much adopting the same motto. OKC don't, they don't have all of those picks to pull off this big blockbuster trade. No, they have those picks to supplement the talent when they have to get rid of J. Will or Chet, depending on the salary cap, because everybody can't get a max contract under this new CBA. You're gonna have to replace that talent. OKC is the good example of it. Minnesota remains to be seen, but they're both in the conference finals. I'm just curious about what the Denver Nuggets will do next.
Yeah, we talk about the Denver Nuggets. They currently have the seventh highest payroll in the NBA as of this recording. You talk about Jamal Murray's contract. He still has 4 more years left on his extension. Michael Porter Jr. has 2 more years left on his current contract, but will be set to be owed $38.3 million in 25-26 and $40.8 million in 26-27. I feel like Michael Porter Jr. is going to have to be one of the guys that you look at. If you're the GM of the Denver Nuggets, who still remains to be determined, as we don't know who that is, you know, with them just recently being eliminated from the playoffs and still undergoing the process of trying to fill out that search. When I look at the contract of Michael Porter Jr., he's the odd man out because you can only pay two to three guys max level money. But like Torrence alluded to, when you have a bench that's thin and doesn't really consist of too much talent, and you got to pay Christian Braun, who stepped up mightily and looked like the Nuggets' second best player through the majority of their conference semifinals tilt with the Oklahoma City Thunder, then someone has to go because you got to make some room in order to pay a young guy like Christian Braun, who you can't afford to let go at this point in time.
But see, Michael Porter, it's easy to say he's the odd man out, but why would a team want Michael Porter at this stage of his career, at this moment, coming off this
That's a great
postseason
question.
performance? He, like you said, high salary, low production, injury history, career-threatening injury history at that. I mean, he's been managed very well over there in Denver. I don't know who to give the credit to. I'm not that involved in his life, clearly, but you know. They've been managing that well, but who's to say the next team will, or the next team willing to put in whatever effort it is to keep him upright if the production isn't there? Jamal Murray hasn't been playing good basketball since the Olympics. He can only come through against the Lakers. They needed him bad. They needed him. And Lu Dort and Caruso, guys like that, they were too much for him. See, I think this summer, and I don't want to move ahead of you if you got if you have another point to make, but this summer we're gonna see teams trade guys that you looked at as core guys. And not just the list of names we've been mentioning, the Giannis's, the Kevin Durant, the Ja Morant, the LaMelo Balls, the Zion Williamson. Those guys we've pretty much all talked about. I alluded to Jaylen Brown possibly being a trade piece during this summer. I'm talking to you now about maybe a Jamal Murray. Minnesota has some interesting cap decisions to make. The Thunder will in 2 years. And if you were true basketball fan, you know, read everything, then you know about this first and second apron thing. It's pretty much essentially a hard cap. teams won't really be able to go over $200 million for real.
And they penalize you for spending money.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They're going to, like, they penalize you to the pretty much, to make it simple for people out there. If you spend, let's say, $250 million on a team, then back-to-back years, that third year, you will be paying taxes upward of like $300 million on top of the salary that you're paying. You'll be paying that into the league luxury tax. Now, I'm sure I probably got the numbers wrong. You go find out, learn something. But nobody's going to keep spending that money year after year, and we don't have any repeat champions, as Gabe said at the beginning, in the last 7 years. Not since Golden State, not since the Miami Heat, not since the Lakers. And those three teams had Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Kobe Bryant. And as great as the guys in the league are right now, I haven't seen any of these guys have anywhere of this, like, production or stature as those guys. Yeah, you know, guys got 30-point averages and this, that, and a third, but you've been around as long as I have been. Those might be the three best basketball players since the 2000s.
Yeah, we're officially in the era of parity in the NBA. And even though I can honestly say, and I think Torrence would agree with me when I say this, that for the most part, we've seen every team in the league have a legitimate shot at winning a championship over the last 30 plus years, with the exception of the Pelicans and the Hornets. Anything is possible at this point. It really is, because when you have that first and second apron that you got to deal with, it makes life very difficult for a GM to determine who do I keep and who do I decide to let go. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see some guys that are second and third options on teams getting flipped because they have outperformed their contract, and these teams that they're currently on cannot afford to pay them the dollars that they want, nor their representative.
Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum both have $300 million contracts, and Jason Tatum just tore his Achilles. And you don't know how a guy will come back from that. Yeah, people look at KD and think, okay, well, Jason Tatum can do that. But, I mean, it happened to Kobe. It happened to Klay Thompson, too. I don't know. I just think we're going to see a lot more Kawhi Leonard to the Raptors type of trades going forward. You're going to start seeing more trades where, like, let's just say Giannis. Yeah, Giannis might have his preferred. Giannis may have his preferred destination, but if a team just steps in with an offer that the Bucks can't refuse, it might be a team that's willing to just let Giannis play out the next 2 years of his contract. I think you're going to start seeing more risk taken like that, because it's a year-after-year battle.
It's a year-after-year battle, and on top of that, you have teams that are going to have to pivot, and you can't necessarily look at it as this long process like you would want to, because you have to strike while the iron is hot. And for those that think the Nuggets have a shot at getting Kevin Durant, good luck, because it's not like those draft picks are that valuable at this moment in time. And then who are you going to provide Phoenix with if you are the Denver Nuggets that's enough to entice James Jones in that front office over there? I was just looking at a lot of that conversation on Twitter where people was like, well, yeah, Kevin Durant could be that missing link in Denver to help Nikola Jokic get another championship. I'm like, that's not going to be easy to pull off.
Why would a team trade a lot of picks for Kevin Durant?
That too, at this stage in his career.
Yeah, not even because of production, yes, but age, like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Another thing, I want to give a shout out to Olympic basketball, international basketball and competition. As a basketball fan over the course of my life, I would say since 2004, I've been watching the Olympics, one of my favorite events. I've noticed a trend since the 08 team of guys leaving the Olympics or the World Championship, and their games are just elevating. If you look back at the careers of LeBron, Melo, Wade, shit, even Kobe Bryant, hey, after that 08 Olympic team, their games went to a new height, a new level. Kobe got to back-to-back finals. LeBron won his first two MVPs. Dwayne Wade had a near MVP season in 09. Melo made it to the conference finals that year. The 2010 team that went to Turkey, Kevin Durant, he leaves that team. 2 years later, he's in the NBA finals. Derrick Rose, he wins the MVP. I think we're saying that with two guys that are in the conference finals and Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Haliburton, watching their games mature throughout the course of their season, adding new elements to it. Now, neither one of those guys started in the Olympics. Tyrese Halliburton didn't even play much. But just having that experience of playing, winning basketball, it helped. It helps. It's quite evident that it helps. And, hey, I hope that there's guys in the league that just take more pride in making it to that level. That's a matchup I like to see with, like, Jaylen Brown and Halliburton. Because there were discussions on why isn't Jaylen Brown on, well, 2024 team. Jalen Brunson, I'm sorry. Jalen Brunson and Jaylen Brown, for that matter.
Both of them, yeah.
Yeah, Jaylen Brunson. Who's the best American point guard? And we got Shea and Ant, man. You know, we get our USA-Canada thing in May again like we did last year in hip-hop. Yeah, man, just a shout-out to just international basketball. I hope we, you know, as a country, continue to take it serious. Keep developing great players because there's obviously more great players coming from all around the world.
Yeah, and it's cool to see guys use that USA basketball experience as a segue into brighter days as stars in the league and, like, forming themselves as a presence, not only just in the NBA, but on their respective franchises. And I think the best is yet to come in the career of Anthony Edwards. And you could also say the same for Tyrese Halliburton. The one thing that I want to address is something that's been on my mind since the conference semifinal round. And that's the general reaction I've seen online across social media in regards to the officiating, particularly in Game 7 of the Nuggets and Thunder series. Now, do we know that officiating in most instances can be better this time of year or around the league? Sure, that goes without saying, right? But I don't know how some fans can fix their mouths to say that it played a major role in the outcome of what we saw to close out last weekend, which was an OKC team after getting down early, going on a run in the middle of the second quarter and taking a double-digit lead into the half and never looking back thanks to the help of their second unit members in Cason Wallace and Alex Caruso, whose defense on Nikola Jokic had Denver setting screens at time to try and free the Joker up from having to deal with him. We saw the Thunder continue to keep their momentum and demolish the Nuggets by 32 points. But the reason why I bring this up is due to the fact that we've seen a rise in physicality during these playoffs. And that's something that fans have called for and wanted to see. And that's what makes the reaction to last week's game so funny to me, because if you go and analyze the numbers, Oklahoma City only shot two more free throws than Denver in a winner-take-all outing, and just three more throughout the entirety of the series, while the total foul count was 151 for the Nuggets to 145 for the Thunder. So that's a margin that I'd say was fairly even. And this is what tends to happen when you have physical matchups and you allow guys to play. Like, I know Scott Foster was out there, and he's a very controversial figure in the officiating space. But at the end of the day, this is the brand of basketball that most fans have called for and wanted to see for years. So let's just enjoy it.
I'm with you, but, like, let's all be prepared for the crazy stuff that Jalen Brunson and SGA are about to pull during these next two series. nah, for real, man. For real. SGA got that move where he, like, lands diagonal. That's crazy. That's crazy. And Jalen Brunson, hey, you know what? He takes advantage of being a small guy out there. You know, he get the sympathy calls. You just got to live with it. So I'm not going to criticize the officiating too much. I know how I would be as a referee. I'm not going to lie. I honestly, I might be the worst referee in the league, depending on your perspective, because guys wouldn't be allowed to talk to me, first of all. I'm not going to lie to you. Soon as somebody walk up to me, I'm blowing the whistle. I'm giving the tech off rip. Like, I'm setting the tone. Like, don't talk to me. I don't care if I get the call wrong. Don't talk to me. Coaches, players, assistants, nobody's talking to me during the game. I'm only talking to the other guys with the whistles on the court. And all of that running to the lane, falling over, I'm not calling any of it. Now, if you were a guy that I felt like could possibly make that shot, then yeah. But you know, when you see some of these power forwards try to draw fouls in the paint on, like, layups, it's like, all right, come on, man. Come on. So don't talk to me.
You're going to be like Joey Crawford, huh? You just go T-ball fuckers up Tim Duncan back in the day on the bench.
Yeah, see, I'm not going to get that ridiculous as far as throwing texts around. Like, I'm only throwing out that first one like that to set the tone with everybody. Like, don't talk to me. But, no, I'm not being Joey Crawford bad. Just Hey, you play, I ref. That's it. Ain't none of that Jokic, Bron, Doncic. You know, you want to talk to me every time out after every court. No, not saying no words to me.
All right, now let's move away from the opening tip-off segment and get into the discussion on the four teams still fighting for a spot to represent their conference in the 2025 NBA Finals, beginning with the battle set to go down in the Eastern Conference Finals between the number four seeded Indiana Pacers and number three seeded New York Knicks, starting off with the team that will have home court advantage at their disposal in this best of seven series in the Knicks. They entered the playoffs with the majority of the country not expecting much of them, and some people, including us, were the belief that the Detroit Pistons could take care of them in the opening round before we watched New York close things out in six games, followed by upsetting the Celtics in round two to get to this point. Now they're getting ready to face off against an Indiana Pacers squad they haven't faced since the days prior to the All-Star break. Mitchell Robinson, who was arguably New York's most vital X factor in their previous series against Boston, missed their previous matchups during the regular season, where the Knicks managed to take that series 2-1. We spoke on whether or not we think the Knicks could continue to carry their performance in clutch time last week, prior to seeing them close out the Celtics in dominating fashion during Game 6 of the conference semis. Now they receive the opportunity to end the season against the same exact squad who happened to knock them off in their own building for the right to get to this very stage a year ago. Both teams are entering this year's matchup healthy this time around. What do you think the Knicks must do in order to get to four wins first in this best of seven series, Torrance, against their longtime rivals to make their first trip to the NBA Finals since 1999?
Let's just list that off real quick. Karl Anthony Towns, stay out of foul trouble. Jalen Brunson, get to the free throw line. OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, knock down your open threes. It's been simple. It's been a simple formula for the Knicks. If Karl Anthony Towns can stay on the floor, he's going to put up a good point. He's going to hit them threes. Jalen Brunson can get to the free throw line. That means the Knicks are controlling the pace. They're controlling the tempo of the game. And later on in the fourth quarter, he's going to be a lethal weapon because he's already drawing the fouls, and now he's opening up his mid-range game. We're not going to ever critique Josh Hart. We know he show up to work with his hard hat and his belt tied tight every day. You know what I'm saying? Pants up to his neck. The New York Knicks, it's a simple formula. Now, for things that could help, if Deuce McBride can provide solid minutes, that would help let guys get some rest. And if Mitchell Robinson can continue his trend of being a great interior presence, that would definitely help. But all in all, it's going to come down to those five guys being the five guys that Leon Rose and World Wide West hoped they would be when they were acquired by the New York Knicks. They bet big. They made some great trades. And this is the culmination. It's time to form like Voltron.
For me, I just got three simple things for the Knicks to do in order to advance to the NBA Finals. Number one, play defense at all times. When the Knicks want to prioritize communication and talk on that end of the floor, they typically tend to defend at a championship level. However, you can't just do that once every 2 to 4 games this time of year. And that's the way that they've operated thus far. You got to do it throughout the whole series. The Pacers are going to seek to play fast, and very rarely will you catch them turning the ball over at a high rate with Halliburton leading the way. So it's going to be very key for New York to really stay connected on that end of the floor at all times, because outside of OKC, you won't find a team in the league that ranked among the top 10 overall in pace, assist to turnover ratio, and true shooting percentage, which Indiana managed to accomplish during the regular season and have carried that into these playoffs as well, as they rank among the top 10 in those categories this postseason. The Knicks got to seek to get as many points in transition as you possibly can against this Indiana Pacers bunch, because they most certainly will seek to do so against you. And plus, we know the Pacers are going to play at a far superior pace than this Knicks squad, who likes to operate more so within a half court offensively with Jalen Brunson leading the charge. Two, the starters got to match Indiana's starting unit. I know we saw the Knicks rally back in games over and over again the previous round against Boston, and that their first unit had some stretches in that series where they managed to impress. I trust Jalen Brunson will find a way to do that no matter what, but the other four guys beside him also must help match the firepower of this Pacers starting five and make sure that they're either getting out the fast starts or keeping the game within a respectable margin. Indiana starting five They've outscored teams by 12 points per 100 possessions during the regular season. And that's also another trend that's made this win to the playoffs and why they've been successful in the first two rounds thus far. We know with their starting five of Haliburton, Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, Pascal Siakam, and Miles Turner, we know their ability to complement one another extremely well. Nembhard, we can expect to see him start the series taking turns with Nesmith defending Jalen Brunson, running the offense as a secondary initiator beside Haliburton. But if the Knicks starters can find a way to counteract this group, which gave the Cavs tough time in the conference semifinal round in the first 12 minutes of play, they'll have a much better shot at getting to the NBA final. And then last but not least, Karl-Anthony Towns has to display his versatility in the front court. I know he averaged a double-double in the conference semis, but he struggled to find his shot against the season round two. Shot 16% from downtown. Tom Thibodeau is going to have to make it a priority to get him involved in the floor of New York's offense. And it's going to be some times where he's going to have to get in Jalen Brunson's grill and let him know, hey, I need that ball when I got a mismatch. He has significant mismatches with Jrue Holiday in the conference semifinal round. And while we know he's an elite perimeter defender, that should have been an invitation for Cat to go down low and seek to get to it. We saw him in games 3 and 4 against the Pistons in the first round, drop 31 and 27 in each game on the way to a couple of efficient shooting nights from the floor. This has got to be Cat's series, and he's going to have to be aggressive from the jump and look to get his. In the 8 games the Knicks have won in these playoffs, he's averaged 21.2 points per game compared to 17 points within their 4 losses. They're going to need him.
Okay, now, one of the first things you mentioned was the Knicks need to get out in transition.
I said when they have the opportunity to, using defense right, to convert to offense, yeah.
But they need to get out in transition, which is going to require a lot of energy. Now, we know Thibodeau only going to play 7 guys. I named the 7 guys when I was speaking. You mentioned Indiana. We know they depth. They playing 10, 11 guys. Do you believe that would be a disadvantage for the New York Knicks?
Oh, depth is going to pose some major problems for the Knicks. And you bring up the depth that the Indiana Pacers have. Like, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently centered around this series, and I haven't heard Benedict Mathurin's name brought up a ton. That's a guy who could be an enormous X factor for the Indiana Pacers. We saw him serve as a pest to DeAndre Hunter in that second round series with the Cleveland Cavaliers, got in his head a little bit. That's a guy that I know the Knicks are going to seek to target defensively, especially in pick and rolls, because that's an area where Mathurin struggles a lot in regards to navigating screens on defense. If he can hold his own on that end of the floor and continue to do what he's been doing offensively, even though the Pacers have been able to succeed in the minutes without him, he's going to prove why he was the missing piece during their playoff run a season ago that a lot of people oftentimes forget about.
You know who had a good postseason last year against the New York Knicks? Obi Toppin. I remember being very impressed with him last year in the postseason. And it also says here that the Pacers bench is averaging 36 points per game and shooting 48% from the field in the playoffs this year. And they currently have 6 players averaging double figures in the scoring department, led by All-Stars Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton. So we know this team loves to play at a fast pace and that their defense has improved significantly since the midway point of the regular season. Now, what do you believe the Pacers must do in order to continue their winning ways to get back to the finals for the first time since 2000? Now, this is a team that's won 8 out of the first 10 playoff games as well, too. Now, we know the Bucks had their injuries, and we know the Cleveland Cavaliers are the Cleveland Cavaliers. So what you think the Pacers need to do?
I got 3 keys for the Pacers as well in order to get to the finals. Just one, play your game. Continue making it a priority to move the ball and find an open man. If Indiana continues to do that with their up-tempo style of play, then they'll continue to generate open shots, which is all you can ask for if you're head coach Rick Carlisle, because that's what's led to 7 players on his roster managing to shoot over 40% or better from long range against the Cleveland Cavaliers in the conference semifinal round. Like, Miles Turner shot over 50% from 3. The guys in the locker room have been known to refer to their style of play as the wear-down effect, and it's something that they must continue to implement. And then continuing to dictate the pace. This is what can help Indiana the most when going up against New York, because as we know, the Knicks prefer playing in the half court. And that allows Jalen Brunson to create and find openings within the teeth of an opposing defense to generate a look for himself or the guys beside him. Pacers had the ability to not only apply 94 feet of pressure on Brunson, but to turn defensive stops and turnovers into points out in transition. Indiana currently sits third in pace this postseason, and continuing to dictate the overall pace and flow of the game has worked in their favor more often than it has not. They got to continue to keep doing that. And then winning a battle on the glass when it counts. I've been on Indiana about this over the last couple of weeks. They struggled a ton on the glass in the playoffs. And while they must find a way to rectify that as best as they can going up against a Knicks squad that boasts a top 10 offensive rebounding percentage in the playoffs, they have allowed 16.2 second chance points per game through their first 10 games of the 2025 postseason. I'm not expecting the Pacers to win the battle on the glass up against this Knicks squad. However, you must find a way to win the battle on the glass when it counts and get the timely ones late in games, just as they did against Cleveland in round two. Because if not, then they're leaving the door open for the clutch player of the year in Brunson and the cardiac Knicks to have a chance in games, which you just don't want to do.
I'm looking at one matchup. Pascal Siakam and Miles Turner. Y'all not going to let Cat handle y'all, are y'all? Y'all not going to let him do that, right? Nah, not y'all too, man. Y'all been a nice dynamic duo defensively and offensively this postseason. It's just Cat over there. Like I said, Mitchell Robinson, he'll come in with 10, 15 minutes, but it's Cat. Siakam, you got to get him in foul trouble. Miles Turner, you got to stop him from scoring. You got to pull him out the paint and knock down your shots as well. I got to take care of Big Pussy the same way that Tony and Paulie and Silvio took care of Big Pussy and Sopranos. You know what I'm saying? You gotta feed him to the fishes. You can't lose this matchup to Karl Anthony Towns. Now, is he a better basketball player than those two? Objectively speaking, yes, he is. But he's a guy that you can beat. And if the Pacers want to win this series, I believe that's where the series will be won at.
Yeah, that's going to be an essential matchup. And Miles Turner is a guy that can stretch the floor just like Cat and protect the rim as well as anybody. Currently leads all players and blocks per game in the postseason. But we've stated our thoughts on what the Knicks and Pacers have to do in order to emerge victoriously in this series. And we will save our predictions on each conference final series for the conclusion of the show. However, when you look at both of these squads right now, Torrance, what would you say are the main items that each squad needs to be worried about the most going into game one?
I mean, the Knicks just got the Knicks really just gotta get the most out of those seven guys. That's what it's gonna come down to. It ain't no at this point in the postseason, ain't no tricks. It ain't no more strategy. Everybody's at a month of game footage. You've already reduced down your rotations. Most of these teams have already decided that they're willing to play a lot of zone defense if need be. We've been a lot. I haven't seen as much zone defense in the NBA ever. I ain't gonna lie to you. It's been a lot of zone defense.
Jim Boeheim would be proud.
Jim Boeheim is a fraud. That's why they have the Carmelo Anthony Center at Syracuse. That's the real king of Cuse. Shout out to Donovan McNabb too. Yeah, man. Like I said, at this point, it's really not any tricks. I mean, we can say all the cliches for this matchup: rebounding, pace, knocking down your open shot. At the end of the day, these two teams, they know each other somewhat. Cat wasn't there, but that's why I said Siakam and Turner. Hey, like I said, you remember what Tony, Silvio, and Paulie did to Big Pussy. Feed them to the fishes, man.
Yeah, Mikal Bridges would be a newcomer to this rematch as well. He also wasn't a part of the series last year that went to seven games.
Yeah, Mikal, him and OG, one of those two got to put up 20 every game. That's what I'm looking at, too. Somewhat. If those guys, along with Brunson and Towns, four guys, yeah, if you can get about 85 to like 90 points out of them, I think the Knicks would be in good position. Because I'll be honest, I think that's going to be a trend this series too. First team to 100 might win. I don't expect a lot of points scored this series.
And you know what? If that's the case, I think one team in this series in particular will be looking at their chops to get to 100. Carrying along from the discussion surrounding the Knicks and Pacers to discuss the Western Conference Finals showdown that features a pair of teams that hold one lone finals appearance between them, and that's the number 6 seeded Minnesota Timberwolves and the number 1 seeded Oklahoma City Thunder. beginning with the team who happened to finish the regular season with the NBA's best record in the Thunder, a squad we watched sweep the Memphis Grizzlies in the opening round before dispatching Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets in a hard-fought seven-game series last weekend to get to this point, led behind this year's favorite to take home MVP honors in SGA, who is averaging 29 points, 6.4 assists, and 6 boards per game in the playoffs as of this recording, in addition to Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, who will get the opportunity to make his return to his hometown of Minneapolis and play in front of his family and friends. Thunder currently boasts the best defensive rating in the playoffs, entering game one of the conference finals. This is a unit that set the franchise record for most wins in a single season. Finished the regular season with the largest point differential in NBA history. But as we know, Torrance, it doesn't guarantee them the Larry O.B., let alone an automatic pass to the finals. What do you believe has to transpire in this series for Oklahoma City to represent the West in the 2025 edition of the finals?
All right, OKC. OKC and your fans. Boy, 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 I do not like the Thunder fans. I'm going to stay consistent, man. J-Dub, Chet, it's all on you, baby. Every round, I've been proven right. When one of you guys steps up to the plate and are that viable number two option, that other max player, you guys look unbeatable. But when both of you guys regress to your struggles like J-Dub in game six and Chet throughout the series, you guys look pretty pedestrian as a team. I know people love to talk about the job Sam Presti's done. A lot of you guys believe OKC has incredible depth. But all in all, I mean, at times they're a pretty limited team when their first instincts don't work. You know, playing five out, spreading the floor. When SGA is struggling, which has been very rare this season, but a couple of the games were against Minnesota where he struggled, but he also had a 40 and 39 point game as well. Those games didn't feature Rudy Gobert either, or Julius Randle. All in all, we know that OKC is going to bring it on the defensive end. They're going to bring it on the defensive end. Lou Dort and Caruso were incredible in that game seven. They were incredible game seven. We know Hardenstein. He going to bang down there. Now, will it be enough for the T-Wolves? I don't know. Minnesota got size, too. They got athleticism, too. These teams match up very well against each other.
Yeah, extremely well. And I think in order for the Thunder to win this series, that Chet Holmgren, like you said, he's definitely going to have to be solid. And we're talking about a player who, with his wingspan, ability to stretch the floor, his quickness, and his rim protection, could prove to be the biggest X factor in this series. And he's had moments where he appears as though he's taking a leap, but he's got to be consistent alongside of Jalen Williams, who in game six, man, I'm not going to lie, I was kind of concerned about him and how he would fare in game seven. And he got off to a slow start, but he found his rhythm in that second quarter, and he did not look back. And that's the Jalen Williams that they're going to need to be in attack mode alongside of SGA, who, you know, for the most part, is going to give you his 27 to 30 every single night, the definition of consistency in every sense of the word. And Isaiah Hartenstein, I know he likes his push shot floater inside the lane, but in this series, if you got an open look, man, you might have to take, because Rudy Gobert is a guy that you don't just want to allow to camp in the lane religious like that. Sometimes you got to bring him out. And I know that they will seek to attack Rudy with like pick and roll switches and try and get that matchup with him isolated on either SGA or J-Dub at their advantage. But Isaiah Hartenstein, man, you got to be aggressive in your own right as well and seek to make Rudy Gobert a multi-time defensive player of the year winner work.
Here's the thing, right? You mentioned Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, as I did. Now, more than total points for the game, I think we're both looking to see if those guys will step up in the minutes SGA isn't playing, because they struggled in their area in their series against the Nuggets. What are some of the adjustments you'd like to see them make to counteract that?
Well, when SGA isn't on the floor, they got to seek to find a way to move the ball. You know, it's going to have to be a by-committee type effort, in my opinion. I think a lot of times their offense gets stagnant because there's so much one-on-one basketball going on where Jalen Williams is just trying to shake his defender and make something happen out of nothing oftentimes. And what tends to happen, they'll go multiple possessions without scoring And before you know it, the opposing team goes on a run and Mark Dagnall has to call a timeout. And that right there has been the main reason why it's very hard to trust the Thunder in spite of their superb defense getting over the hump and taking that next step to get to the NBA Finals. Sure, you know, beating an experienced Denver Nuggets squad is a major win for this group, which is the youngest squad in the NBA. But people have to understand that if they really want to get to that championship level, it's on these guys as a collective to show up. And SGA can't do it alone, as great as he is.
Now, see, the thing, like you mentioned, J-Dub with the ISO play, that's the thing about their offense that I don't like, is that outside of SGA, when you look at their offense, they're very similar to Boston. You just keep throwing the ball around in circles until somebody decides to take a three at some point. But there isn't much penetration on the defense. Hopefully, I think Minnesota stays disciplined in that area because they got the athleticism and the length to close out on a lot of those threes and make those guys put the ball on the floor and make a shot. And I think it's one play, man, they kept doing the backdoor cuts against Denver the other night, right behind Jokic, leading to alley-oops for Chet and Hardenstein. The very few times they would get penetration, Minnesota actually has the athletes to stop a lot of that. If they can close out on those three-point shooters and take that away from the Thunder.
And I believe that they had that ability, especially with Jay McDaniels and his skill set. You know, he lives to close out well on guys, and he did an exceptional job of that through the first couple of rounds against the Lakers and the Warriors. And then, like I said, if Hardenstein isn't going to be aggressive, he's playing in the Rudy Gobert's hands. Because if you allow Rudy to camp inside that paint, yeah, he can swat some backdoor cuts. You know, he turns his body quick enough to make a play here and there. And before you know it, you're looking at him having a double-double.
But like you said, the fact that Hardenstein's out there, and if he's playing mostly around the paint, that allows Rudy to basically camp down there. Now you are taking penetration away from SGA if they're both in the game at the same time.
I agree.
Now, we talked about the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm going to just get right to it. What do you feel like they have to do in order to win this series?
Value every possession.
Yes.
Value every single possession. The last three games in that series against Golden State, they committed 20-plus turnovers. They could get away with their sins in that series because there was no Stephen Curry, and they just were too athletic and too big for that Golden State squad. They're not going to be able to do that shit against the Thunder. You just can't. And on the playoffs, they're averaging nearly 15 turnovers a game. And among all the teams that are currently left in this playoff, they average the most turnovers a game. That just can't happen. And Chris Finch has been on these guys time and time again about that. Another thing, when you have big leads, you got to close. It's been far too many times I've watched Minnesota, as great as they are, they let teams back in ball games by having these mental lapses. And I know Michael Norrie, the assistant coach, who's done a hell of a job over there and should be in consideration for a few head coaching jobs if he isn't already, has been on them about that time and time again. Elston Turner, those guys who I'm very familiar with during his days as assistant under Mike D'Antoni with the Houston Rockets. Like, they got to get that right. As far as, like, the collective offensively, just continuing to move the ball around and believing in one another. But most importantly, valuing every single possession. Because they're going to be in games. They have the talent. But it's going to be hard to win games against this OKC bunch if you don't take care of the basketball.
Because OKC, they're attacking that ball. Caruso is trying to get steals. Lu Dort, he's pushing through screens. He's trying to get the ball out of your hands. SGA, we know he's slick with the steals. Chet, shot blocker. Hardenstein, he plays position with very well. He moves his feet very well. This is an incredible defensive team. And like you said, Minnesota, they prone to just giving the ball away. And when you speak about value in possessions, it's not just turnovers. Shot selection. They have to stay aggressive throughout this series. You can't let Oklahoma get comfortable with the fact that you will just take a bunch of pull-up threes. You got to mix it up. You got to attack the rim. You got to try to get to the free throw line. You got to try to get to the free throw line. I think that's the most valuable thing for Minnesota. You hit the nail right on the head. Value in possessions. You got to try to win every possession of the game. Because like you said, they get comfortable. They just start shooting anything. They start getting lackadaisical with the basketball. And Mike Conley not going to be able to play a lot of minutes either. So this is really down to Ant, DiVincenzo, and Julius Randle, their decision-making in the half court.
And you talk about Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards, he got to the line 5 times a game in a conference semifinal round. Didn't shoot from the free throw line at a clip that I think he would be proud of. Is 69%, but I want to see him try and get to the line at least
7 to 10
times a game. Yeah,
10.
He has to. He has to, and he has to come out aggressive because he's had great second halves in these playoffs. It's time to put together a complete game. You average 26.2 points in the conference semis. In the first round, you average 26. It's time to take it up another notch.
And that's my thing, too. Sometimes it's good to get your best players some easy shots to start the game, too. You know, the teams tend to do things like, oh, man, let's get Rudy a few buckets to get him started and da-da-da. Nah, how about we get Ant a backdoor lob pass, get him an alley-oop, get him hype, get the crowd into it. You know, have Ant and Julius Randle running inverted pick and roll. You know, Ant may be the screener. I don't know if they haven't sent that look out much this season, but it's the postseason. Try something new. You never know. Pick and pop. Now, when we look at this series, especially from the Minnesota side, we know Anthony Edwards, Julius Randle, highest scoring duo of the postseason so far. You mentioned Ant and his second half heroics. And we just heard Draymond Green recently state that throughout his career, he's played maybe about 33, 34 playoff series. And the only two series he felt like he lost his matchup was Pascal Siakam in the 2019 finals against the Toronto Raptors and against Julius Randle the last round. But those are the star players. Who's some of the key X factors for the Minnesota Timberwolves in the series for you?
Man, when I look at the Minnesota Timberwolves, the biggest X factor for me is Naz Reid. Naz Reid, when he has it going, can make games not only for Minnesota, but he can break the opposition, especially when he's hitting the trailer man threes at a high clip and he's making impact plays defensively. And with his ability to move the puppies and get after it on the perimeter, I think if he has a big time series, that's going to pay significant dividends for a Timberwolves squad that's going to need the former Sixth Man of the Year award winner to be an instant impact contributor in his best of seven matchup.
Jaden McDaniels, for me, we mentioned Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren and their importance to the success of the OKC Thunder. Jaden McDaniels, hey, man, you got to go take care of that business against J-Dub. If you can make him uncomfortable, slow him down, once again, now you're putting that pressure back on the Thunder. SGA is going to have to make all those plays. Or a guy like Caruso and Lu Dort, they're going to have to knock down open three-point attempts. If you can take that second option away from them and also contribute on offense. When he's cutting to the rim, getting easy layups and dunks, hitting the occasional open three, it definitely opens up their offense a whole lot more because now you don't have anybody for the defense to relax off of.
So you expect Jay McDaniel to start the game defending J-Dub over SGA?
I don't expect it, but see, I'm a proponent of the Bill Belichick way of thinking. I'm putting my best cornerback on the second best wide receiver, and I'm doubling the first guy. So to keep it simple for this series, I'm putting McDaniels on J-Dub. And SGA, we send doubles at him. We might, you know, let him one-on-one because at the end of the day, he's going to get his 26 to 32 point per game average. Yeah, you can make it hard on him, but it's going to happen. You can discourage the team when he can't look to his left or right and know that there's another guy that's bringing 20 points tonight. Now it becomes a psychological game. Now does Cason Wallace, does he feel like he need to put up extra shots because J-Dub not? Isaiah Joe hasn't played, but if he gets in the game, you know what's going to be on his mind because J-Dub don't got it going. Caruso's not much of an offensive player. Yeah, he can hit some shots, but if he feel like he needs to hit some shots, those shots become a little bit harder. So that's my way of thinking. You're never going to stop the superstar player. So, yeah, you can send the occasional doubles to get the ball out of his hands. The best defender, I think, should always be on the second option. Take that second option away. Now you're messing with the trickle-down effect of the whole roster.
The one plus I will say in regards to Minnesota, they got a plethora of options they can throw at either SGA or J-Dub.
I'm focusing on J-Dub, man.
I understand. I get it.
I'm focusing on J-Dub, and I think that Julius Randle and Nas can definitely put Chet in some interesting positions. His length will be a problem for Julius, you know, especially when it comes to driving to the rim. But if he's able to get his body into him and knock him back some, which he can do, because I've seen Chet, he's not the sturdiest guy out there. Not yet, at least. I think they got a great chance.
Yeah, I say this about that one. This is going to be one of those series. It don't matter how it ends. It's going to force Chet to get his ass in the weight room this upcoming summer. It's going to force him to do it. You're going to have to do it.
And clear out real quick. Clear out real quick. All right, enough of these teams, this team talk. These X factors, these principles. Hey, man, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going against Anthony Edwards in the Western Conference Finals. That's what we here for. You know, a little Adidas versus Converse matchup. You know what I'm saying? A little changing in the guards in a little bit. You know, we talked about it being a new generation of shooting guards in the NBA. And we didn't quite include Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But to me, he a two-guard. At the end of the day, he a two-guard. He played a point because of the analytics, and we want to keep the ball in our best players' hands. And, you know, but he ain't no point guard. He ain't no point guard. He ain't Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Chris Paul. You know, well, what's that word they used to use? Maestros. You know what I'm saying? Coaches on the floor.
True point guards.
Yeah, he ain't one of those. You know, he the AAU point guard. Like, I'm about to try to score 50. If they double me, I'm throwing it to the open man. He a shooting guard. Anthony Edwards called Shai the MVP this year. Shai still hasn't received the MVP award. We don't know if it'll be game one. It's looking like maybe game two. I don't know why the league took so long to do it.
Yeah, I'm wondering the same myself.
But I know that at some point, especially if it's a home game, Anthony Edwards going to get the news that SGA just received the MVP award. He told Obama he was the truth, man. He the one that got the Olympic gold medal, and he already took care of the guy with the reigning shooting guard title, and Devin Booker took care of him in the postseason last year. Ant been collecting Infinity Stones. A lot of the old guys on his hand right now, Steph included. I don't care what y'all say. But you got a young guy right there, a guy a little bit older than you, in the prime of his career. He right here for the taking. This the time right here. This is the matchup. This is what we came to see. I'm old. You know what I'm saying? I'm an old guy. I'm damn near 50 years old, 40, whatever. I grew up in the Kobe and LeBron era, kids. Now, I don't know what the youth really into these days, but I would imagine that this would be a great introduction to basketball and a great introduction to greatness. None of these guys have really just had incredible performances this postseason. This would be a good round for guys to step up. Tyrese Halliburton, Jalen Brunson, I'm looking at you too. Yeah, you know, guys have had some winners, some good fourth quarters, but where that beginning and end 40-point masterpiece? Where that great going on the road in a game five, putting up 35, being just unstoppable on both ends? Like, I'm looking for that. I want to see SGA and Ant guard each other down the stretch. Like, I really want to see these matchups play out.
So, ladies and gentlemen, the time has come for us here at the New 24 for us to give our official predictions on these series. We got a trio of teams garnering to bring home a championship for the first time in the history of their respective organizations, beside another that has not won since the days disco music was the popular choice of music in America. When you look at both of these series, with all that you said, who do you see coming out of the East and West representing their respective conference in the NBA Finals set to start on June the 5th?
I'm truly disgusted. Because deep down, I would love to see Minnesota Knicks I'd love to see Anthony Edwards in the NBA Finals in Madison Square Garden so we can do that whole thing. A part of me feels like the NBA and the ghost of David Stern. Yeah, they would, the Knicks would be in the finals. That would be incredible for the league. But the Thunder Pacers, yeah. Last year, the TV deal, fuck it. Let's just give them the worst possible rating possible. Y'all been hearing me all show. I'm going Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Indiana Pacers in the NBA Finals. I got the Timberwolves winning in six, and I got the Pacers winning in six.
Wow.
I've been wrong all postseason, y'all.
And I have, on some respects as well. That's the NBA Finals that I have.
Let's go.
Yeah, I have it that exact way. I have it that exact way. I have the Timberwolves in six games, and I'll state why I have them in six. When I look at Oklahoma City, they just went through a gauntlet of facing a Denver Nuggets squad to get to Western Conference Finals. I saw them still struggle to find shot creation and scoring outside of SGA, like me and Torrance discussed. While at the same time, Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle have been incredible throughout the postseason. The Thunder struggled immensely scoring in the half court, most notably against the zone defense that the Denver Nuggets threw at them. You heard me and Torrance talking about how zone defenses have been highly utilized in these playoffs. I'm pretty sure Minnesota is going to show one at some point in this series. Oklahoma City may have the depth. They may have the best defense and the most valuable player on their side. But the Wolves, time and time again, have found a way to eke out wins with their dynamic duo in Edwards and Randle. And I think if they could take care of business and go to Minnesota for a game six with a 3-2 series lead, they're not going to let those fans down in the Target Center, which has been one of the premier arenas in the NBA playoffs this year, where the fans have it loud at all times. And then when you talk about the Pacers, it's simple for me. The Knicks may have home court advantage, but when the Pacers have the depth that they have and the taste that they got last spring getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think the second time is the charm. You got to keep this in mind. The more guys you play this time of year, the greater your ability is to spread fouls around when action gets physical. Indiana got more bodies. And like Torrance said, Karl-Anthony Towns cannot afford to get into foul trouble, but we all know that that's one of his greatest issues, is getting into foul trouble. We saw it in game five against the Boston Celtics in the conference semifinal round, which led to that series going to six games. So I got the Indiana Pacers in six games and the Minnesota Timberwolves in six games. And an NBA Finals matchup where the Midwest will be very well represented. And I'd be very eager to see what the ticket prices will be for game one of that Finals matchup if it were to take place.
Man, shout out to the Midwest, man. Y'all know it's the best. And, you know, shout out to everybody listening around the world. You know, LA, Chicago, New York, Germany, Australia, England. You know, all around the world. But the New York Knicks, they haven't just been great during this postseason either.
They have.
Like, we've all quickly forgotten that they were down 20, 30 points in that series against the Celtics a whole lot, especially the first two games. They went through a slugfest with the Pistons that, hey, if I was a betting man, if they play this series again next year, Detroit will come out on top. And the Indiana Pacers, they're an evolved version of those Detroit Pistons. They have the postseason experience that the Pistons were lacking. So I got to go with the Pacers, man. And y'all know I like to talk crazy about Tyrese Halliburton, but dude comes through when it's time to. As far as Minnesota, the only way they can lose this series to me is if they beat themselves, as we mentioned. If they beat themselves. But they have everything to counter against the OKC Thunder. They have everything. Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton. It'd be a great, great way to cap off a great year, man. Olympic gold medals, NBA championship.
And not only a great way to cap off a great year, but how about having two teams that were the runner-up a season ago in their respective conferences squaring off for the chance to capture the first NBA Finals in the history of their respective franchise? I think that'd be pretty damn epic. Well, that officially concludes yet another edition of the New 24. If you've enjoyed what you've heard through the first 28 episodes, including this one, Please feel free to leave us a 5-star rating with additional commentary in the comment section, letting us know just what you like about it across the platforms you use to listen to your favorite shows. If we can't thank you enough for all of your support, or shoot us an email letting us know your thoughts on the show directly at tntfpod@gmail.com. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platforms for the New 24 across Instagram and X at TNTF_ to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows and episodes, including on all of the latest currently trending around the NBA today. Don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feed as well directly at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Definitely continue to stay in tune with us to get everything you need as far as it pertains to the 2025 NBA playoffs. Once again, from myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, we appreciate you tuning in yet again and hope you enjoy the rest of your week out there. And as always, peace.